Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'm very happy to be here today. And it's very enlightening to see that so many of you are responding to Krishna consciousness. So many of you are responding to Srila Prabhupada's call. So, okay, I'll just ask a simple question. How many of you have been convinced about Krishna consciousness? Please raise your hand. How many of you are chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra regularly on feasts? Oh, very good. I'm very impressed. Thank you so much. I know Bangalore is a very special place. My understanding has become completely confirmed. Srila Prabhupada wanted this movement to spread for the benefit of everyone in this world. Because the whole world is a place of suffering. And in the age of Kali, that suffering becomes very, very intensified. The suffering becomes very intense. In the age of Kali, people become more and more averse to Krishna. And as a result of that, they suffer. So the further you go away from Krishna, we become subjected to suffering. On the other hand, the more and more we get close to Krishna, we enjoy. Ever since you have accepted Krishna consciousness, did you like the condition of your life improve?
Hari Bol.
I presume Hari Bol means yes. Did your life become joyful? Yes, that's the fact. Prasade sarva dukkhanam anilakshya. When you receive Krishna's mercy, then all the suffering disappears. Krishna also assured us in Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarva papibhyo moksha ishami mahasya. Suffering is due to sinful activities, pap. And when there is no pap, no suffering. And Krishna said, you surrender unto me, I will deliver you from all your sinful reactions. So this is such a wonderful arrangement, Krishna. Just surrender to him and he will deliver us from all our suffering. Also, another way to look at it, the bhakti lata bij. When the bij, the seed of devotional service, the devotional service is compared to a creeper, bhakti lata. And the seed. When the seed falls on the ground and it fructifies, then it, how does one seedling come? Did anyone, have you seen a seed is developing into a seedling? What happens? First two leaves come, right? So these two leaves of that seedling of Bhakti Lata are Kleshagni and Shubhada. Kleshagni. Klesha means distress, suffering. And Gna means to kill. So, as you take to Krishna consciousness, the kleshas are killed. Kleshas are murdered. Klesha in bhakti destroys klesha. And Shubhada. Shubha means auspiciousness, and da means give. It brings in one hand, all our suffering condition disappears, and auspiciousness comes to our life. So that is the result of acceptance of devotional service. Is it true? Isn't it? These are the words from the scriptures. And the scriptures deal with the absolute truth. If it doesn't work that way, then we have to understand there's something wrong with ourselves. Something is wrong with our application. The seed didn't fructify. If the seed falls on a rocky soil, will the seed turn into a seedling? Similarly, if our heart is not prepared, then Bhakti Lata will not develop into a seedling. What to speak of growing into a creeper? And Krishna makes all arrangements to distribute bhakti to us. That's why he comes here. He spoke Bhagavad Gita himself. Tomorrow is Gita Jayanti. Tomorrow is the day when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna is giving advice to Arjuna, but actually this Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedas. Vedic wisdom flows in two streams: Upanishad stream and Purana stream. The essence of Upanishad stream is Gita, Bhagavad Gita, or Gita Upanishad. And the essence of the Purana stream is Srimad Bhagavata or Bhagavad Purana. That's why these books are very, very important. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and distributed Krishna consciousness on the basis of these two scriptures. Srila Prabhupada came and distributed Krishna consciousness principally on the basis of these two scriptures. Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study, Srimad Bhagavatam is the advanced course. And then finally Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a practical demonstration of the entire Vedic wisdom. He is a person Bhagavata. There's Grantha Bhagavata, and he demonstrated. Apone Achari Prabhu Jivere Shikhai. Practicing himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed the living entities about Krishna consciousness. So since tomorrow is the Gita Jayanti, maybe we discuss about Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. As I mentioned, that Gita is the essence of the entire Vedic wisdom. The Sanskrit word Veda means knowledge. It comes from the root Vid. Vid means to know, and Veda means that has been known, or knowledge. So in simple words, Vedas actually mean knowledge, the real knowledge. And this knowledge descended from the spiritual world. This knowledge came directly from Krishna at the beginning of creation. Do you all remember how this knowledge came? Who was the first personality in this universe? Lord Brahma. Lord, in this world, everyone comes in ignorance. Whoever comes to this material nature is born in ignorance. Everyone. Om Ajnana Timirantas. Everyone is born in ignorance. Even Brahma. Although he came directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he also was in ignorance. That means he didn't have any knowledge. He didn't know who he was. He just found himself. His consciousness was fully developed. But he didn't have any recollection of his past. He saw himself sitting on a lotus, but he didn't have any awareness, any knowledge of who he was. He thought if he could find out where he came from, then he would be able to understand who he was. So he climbed down the stem of that lotus. He climbed down for a long, long time. He couldn't come to the bottom. Then finally he came up, sat again on the lotus, and then he heard the sound. The waves of the Garbha ocean were splashing against each other, creating a sound that sounded like tapaha, tapaha. So in this way, the Lord inspired Brahma to perform austerity, tapasya. And this tapaha was the way to go inside, internalize his consciousness. So Brahma then projected his consciousness inward. The sound is all right. I think something is wrong with this. Those who are at the back, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Or yeah, now it's better. So, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Can you understand me?
Yes.
Okay. So then Brahma heard a sound when he internalized himself. And that sound was actually Krishna's flute. The sound of Krishna's flute. And it sounded like Om. Brahma meditated on that Om Kar. Gayatri developed from that. Brahma meditated on Gayatri, and the Vedic knowledge developed in Brahma's heart. So that's why Gayatri is considered to be the mother of the Vedas. Veda Mata. Mother of the Vedas is Gayatri. And in this way, meditating upon Gayatri, the Vedic knowledge, the transcendental knowledge, revealed in the heart of Brahma. Don't we sing every day? Dibbo Gyan Hride Prakashita. The transcendental knowledge is revealed in the heart. Generally, we acquire knowledge in the head. But this knowledge is revealed in the heart. It's a matter of revelation. It's revealed by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna's representative, the spiritual master. Dibbo Gyan Hride Prakashita. The same point has been made at the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tene Brahma Hrida Adi Kavaye Moihanti Jatsuraya.
Tene Brahmarida. Tene, by him, this knowledge was given. Krishna gave this knowledge in the heart of him. And that is the Vedas. And then Vedas developed in a vast way. Bhurini, Vedas are prescribing many, many activities. Bhuri Karmani, Vedas are vast, and Bhuri Karmani, innumerable activities have been prescribed in the Vedas. Therefore, it's very difficult to understand the real purpose of the Vedas or meaning of the Vedas. That's why there's a need for simplifying it. That's why Krishna came and gave the Bhagavad Gita. And as we know, the Bhagavad Gita is dealing with three aspects: karma, yoga, bhakti, and jnana yoga. These three again are actually covering the entire Vedic wisdom. The entire Vedic wisdom is covered in this. First aspect is karma. Karma means activities. And the Vedas are dealing in that aspect. The Vedas again have three khandas: karma khanda, jnana khanda, and bhakti. So, karma khanda, the Vedas are dealing with how to enjoy in this material nature. Karma khanda, actually Vedas have six branches of philosophy called Sat Darshan. And they are Karma Mimamsa or Purva Mimamsa. That is dealing with the karma khanda section. The understanding is very simple. You want to enjoy, then learn how to act properly. Because right action will lead to enjoyment, wrong action will lead to suffering. So, Vedas are giving the prescriptions, how to act in the right way. You want this, act in this way, you will get it. You want to become very rich, act in this way, you will get it. You want to become a king, fine. Act in this way, your desire will be fulfilled. So in this way, Karmakanda section of the Vedas are giving various prescriptions for enjoying in this material nature. And one example for that is, see, somebody thinks that if he gets a lot of money, then he'll enjoy. Now he robs a bank, he gets the money, but police comes and arrests him and he ends up in the prison. Right? Wrong action is leading him to suffering. But the right action will lead to enjoyment. Therefore, it's very important that we know how to act in a right manner. In today's world, you'll see people are just recklessly acting. And the result is, they're suffering. Although apparently there's a lot of material prosperity, but they're actually suffering. There's so much suffering in this world. And that's why it's very important to follow this Vedic instruction, even if we want to enjoy. Vedas are not saying, reject this. Vedas say, well, if you want to enjoy, go ahead and enjoy. But enjoy, try to enjoy in the right way. And in spite of enjoying in so many ways, eventually what happens? One realizes that in spite of all his endeavor, first enjoyment is suffering. then he considers, why am I suffering? That is actually taking him to the Gamaka section. Why am I suffering? And gives him this different branches of philosophy in the Vedas that give him the right understanding. Why you are suffering? The Gamakanda is dealing with four branches: Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, and Yoga. And then finally, in Yoga, when one achieves this perfection, then he sees the Lord in the heart. When you see the Lord in the heart, you see who He is, how great He is, and compared to Him, how insignificant we are. Therefore, naturally, one surrenders to Him. The perfection of yoga actually leads to surrender. And that's what Krishna actually gave in Bhagavad Gita. The ultimate consideration, surrender unto Me. And that surrender leads to Sharanagati. Krishna actually gave us the process of surrender. And then surrender, the perfection of yoga, leads to the next branch or final destination. That is called Uttar Mimamsa or final conclusion. The final conclusion is Vedanta. And the Vedanta has been explained. Commentary on the Vedanta sutras have been given by Vyasadeva himself, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, Bhagavad Gita is ultimately leading to Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam is describing pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God. So, that's why these two books are very, very important. Our whole life should be based on those two books. And Srila Prabhupada therefore gives so much emphasis on these books. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study. Let everybody read Bhagavad Gita. That's why we make this effort to distribute Bhagavad Gita all over. Actually, our business is to distribute Bhagavad Gita every day. But we take advantage of a few occasions. Especially in the West, Christmas is a big time. In Christmas, everyone is in a happy mood. Everyone is in a buying spree. And when they're in a happy mood, they are given the Bhagavad Gita. We take advantage that while people are enjoying, the devotees go out in a marathon to distribute Bhagavad Gita. And it's also quite nice or coincidental that Christmas time and Gita Jayanti practically comes at around the same time. So in the West, they're taking advantage of the marathon in Christmas time, and here we take advantage of marathon in Gita Jayanti. So in this way, we give out Krishna consciousness, because that is the most important business we have. First step is we accept Krishna consciousness ourselves, and then we give it to others. Like if there is an epidemic and you get the medicine, you get cured. If there is an epidemic, many, many people are dying. And if you get the cure and you apply to yourself and you, who are also suffering from the disease, get cured, then what are you going to do? Will you keep the medicine to yourself, or will you go out and distribute it to others so that they also can be cured? So we must recognize that people are suffering. There is an epidemic where people are dying. Their spiritual life is dying. The wonderful opportunity that they got as a human being is being simply squandered. It came with such a wonderful possibility, but we are not taking advantage of that. Therefore, there's a need to remind everyone, please come and take it. And this knowledge is so sublime and so simple. Krishna is giving some very, very simple understanding. Actually, reality or truth is simple. Lie is complex. Truth is simple. Therefore, the truth. Truth is one. The truth. But a lie, what is the article before lie? A lie. Because the lies can be many. Sun rises in the east. Right? This is the truth. Sun rises in the west, north, south, southeast, northeast. So many different concoctions or lies can develop about the sun's place of rising. So what is the reality? What is the real truth? We are in the material nature, and in this material nature we have a material body, and unfortunately we are identifying this body to be the self. Isn't it? Generally, what happens? Doesn't everyone think that he is his body? Who are you? I am so and so, I am son of such and such person. This is my identity, this is my address, this is... Now, who are you talking about? The body. But the right at the beginning, Krishna is pointing out, you are not this body. Arjun, you are not this body. But another important thing about Bhagavad Gita, at the very beginning, Arjuna was giving various reasons why he shouldn't fight. Krishna didn't say anything. Only when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and said that, Krishna, I am surrendering myself unto you as your disciple. Shishyasteham sadhimantam prapannam. Prapannam, again this word is coming. Surrendering. So surrender is the most important. Unless we surrender, we won't receive this knowledge. Tad viddhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Pranipatena, again, this means the same thing. Pranipatena, prakshishta rupena nipatena. When we very nicely, very sincerely, we surrender, we offer ourselves. That is the process, the first consideration. Pranipatena. Prapanyam Sharanagati Prapati Sadhi Mamtam Prapanyam. Only when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, then only Krishna started to speak. And what was Krishna's first instruction to Arjuna? Now, you're speaking like a very wise man. But you are lamenting over something that one should not lament. That means he's saying that, Arjuna, you do not know what the real truth is. Or you don't know the fact of life. You are lamenting over this body. Asuchyam manusochasma. Yet, pragyavadam shtabhasa se. You're speaking like a wise man. At gatasuna gatasunscha nanu shochanti pandita. The pandita the learned ones, the wise person, a wise person doesn't lament over na anusochanti, doesn't lament over something that is transient. This material nature is a transient world. And this is a world of unconsciousness, inert. It's inert. Everything in this material nature is inert. But the consciousness and life comes to this body made of inert matter because of the presence of the soul. The soul is the real identity, not the body. The body is changing. Every moment the body is changing. But we are the same. We as an individual, the same. So who is that individual who is unchanging? That is the soul. And Krishna then gives the knowledge about the soul. And situating Arjuna in the real knowledge. Na jayate mriyate va padashi. The soul is never born, nor will it ever die. On the other hand, the body, dehi nasmin yatha dehe komaram jovanam jara. The body is changing, tatha dehantara prakti. At one time, we leave this body and go away to our next destination. And when the soul leaves the body, the dead body becomes dead. The body made of dead matter becomes dead. Tatra kapali devana. Why lament over that? Jatasari dhruvam rittur. Anything that is born is bound to die. And anything, anyone that has died will take birth again. So why lament? Now isn't this knowledge very, very important for everyone? In this world, everyone is identifying himself with the body, and as a result of that, he is suffering so much. Nobody wants to die, but everyone is being forced to die. But if you have this simple knowledge, I am a spirit soul never dies, therefore I will never die. The problem of life, problem of death is solved. Just with one understanding. Isn't it? Does it make sense? It's simple arithmetical calculation. Right? A is equal to B, B is equal to C, therefore A is equal to C. I am the spirit soul. Spirit soul never dies, therefore I will never die. But the important thing is to become situated in our spiritual identity. And that's what Krishna is advising, how to become situated in our spiritual identity. And then gradually, Krishna is actually revealing his identity. In the fourth chapter, at the beginning what Krishna said, after the third chapter giving the instructions on Karma Yoga, what Krishna say? Arjun, this knowledge I gave to Vibhashana. Now just consider Arjun's situation. Arjun and Krishna are friends. They're cousins. They're of the same age, practically. And then all of a sudden Krishna said, Arjun, I gave this knowledge to Vibhashana. What was Arjun's reaction? Are you? Krishna, you were born just the other day. How did you give the knowledge to Vibhashan, who took birth so many millions of years ago? Aparam bhavato janma, param janma Vibhashan. You were born just the other day, aparam bhavato janma, and param janma Vibhashan. Vibhashan was so many millions, billions of Yes.
And what was Krishna's answer to that?
Bahuni me vyatitani janmani tavachara.
Arjun, many, many times both you and I have taken birth.
Tani aham vira sarvani.
About them I know everything. Although I have taken many, many births, about all those births I remember everything. Naktam vittu paranta.
But you don't remember anything.
See, the difference between Arjuna and Krishna, difference between a jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna further explains, ajo api san abhayatma. Although I am unborn, ajo api san abhayatma, bhutanam ishvaro api san. Although I am the source and origin of everything, prakriti samadhisthaya sambhavami atmamaya.
Taking advantage of my internal potency, I take birth.
Although I do not take birth, yet I
sambhavami,
I manifest myself. So Krishna's appearance is his manifestation here out of his own sweet will. And Krishna then explains why he takes birth, why he appears, sambhavami atmamaya. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati. Whenever there is a decline of spiritual religiosity, an increase of irreligiosity, dharmasya glani and adharmasya abhutta, tadatmanam shijanam, to rectify the situation, I manifest myself. So this is how gradually we are getting to know who Krishna is. And time again we are getting to know Krishna more and more as we go chapter by chapter. So if we just study this one book carefully, we'll have the perfect knowledge. But there is a secret to receive this knowledge. Krishna also made that point clear to Arjuna. I am giving you this knowledge because you are my devotee, bhaktosya, sakhachi. Because you are my devotee, because you are my friend, I am imparting this knowledge unto you and re-establishing this knowledge once again when it actually was polluted, contaminated, lost. Yoga Nashtaparanta. So in this way Krishna is actually establishing the real essence of Vedic wisdom. Again we can go back to that point. Krishna himself is telling in Bhagavad Gita, what is the purpose of the Vedas? Vedishya Sarvai Ahameva Vedya. The purpose of all the Vedas is to reveal my identity. In all the Vedas, I alone am to be known. That is the purpose of the Veda. All these things are there, you know, like first is enjoy in this material nature, karma kanda, jnana kanda, how to get liberated from this material bondage. But beyond that liberation comes bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Person. So in such a simple way Krishna has given this knowledge, and now it's up to us to accept this knowledge and take full advantage of this wisdom that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has given. And so mercifully Srila Prabhupada took that knowledge and distributed it all over the world. Even in India, we have been able to receive this knowledge simply because of Srila Prabhupada. Even in Bangalore, had Prabhupada not have come and distributed this knowledge, even in Bangalore we wouldn't have been sitting together like this.
Although you are born in India, although you are close, so close to the Vedic culture, Vedic wisdom, we wouldn't have been able to take advantage of this. So this is how we have to see. What a great good fortune that Srila Prabhupada has created for us. And this knowledge is being distributed all over the world. Wherever we go, we get a gathering like this. Of course, India is very special. India is very special. Like you are so close to the Vedic culture. But you have forgotten. Although you are born in India, Prabhupada actually mentioned that we have, the Indians have it inherent in them, very close to this knowledge, very close to this culture, very close to this process of Krishna consciousness. But it's covered. But that covering is not very deep. Just a little scratch, just a little scratching, and it comes out. So that's an advantage. It's a very great advantage that we are born in India, came so close to the Vedic culture. But of course, Prabhupada has created the good fortune for all the people all over the world. Like, so many devotees are responding to this Vedic knowledge, Vedic wisdom. And Prabhupada made it very clear that this Vedic wisdom is for everyone. Vedic knowledge is for everyone. And whoever jai bhaje, shai bhava, abhakta vincha. Whoever accepts this process and practices it, he is great. Those who do not accept it, those who did not take to devotional service, they are unfortunate. And when one accepts it, his life becomes perfect. And right in front of us, we have the example of Bhakti Vikash Maharaj. Right. He was not born in India. He was born in England. But when he came across Srila Prabhupada's teachings, just accepted it. And today we can see his whole life has been dedicated to this Krishna consciousness movement. And he has become the perfect example of this culture. Hari Bol, another wonderful devotee has arrived, also from England, who also has dedicated his whole life to this. Hari Sauri Prabhu Ki. So this is the uniqueness of Krishna consciousness. Recently, someone was telling me how many people are being converted into Christianity. And I said, it doesn't matter. Because what's the difference? Those, although they're Hindus, but they're not really practicing Vedic culture. So if they become Christians, what's the big deal?
They eat beef.
Because the Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone. In a way, maybe when they become Christians, they'll take to Krishna consciousness even more readily. And anyway, let's not get into that. The point is that Krishna consciousness is for everyone. And we are seeing it all over the world. Yes, when one is born in India, when one is born in Hindu culture, it is, they're coming very close to the culture. They come very close to the Vedic culture. Therefore, it is easy for them to accept. So that, as we are seeing here, most of you are responding so nicely to this Krishna consciousness movement because you are born in Hindu background, Hindu family. And so the point is that Srila Prabhupada has given us something which is for the benefit of everyone. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that this Krishna consciousness movement is going to spread all over the world in every town and village. It is spreading every town and village. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can the words of God go in vain? Can the words of God remain unfulfilled? No. So we have to consider that it is going to happen, and especially now we should not have any doubt about that prediction, because we have seen how amazingly, how miraculously this Krishna consciousness movement has spread by Srila Prabhupada. So this is something that we should take it very, very seriously. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. We should take this movement very seriously, and not that we should take it only for our own benefit. We should make it a point to give it out to others. And one of the best possible way of distributing this knowledge is by giving Srila Prabhupada's books. Therefore, it's so important that we distribute books. How many of you have joined Krishna consciousness by reading Srila Prabhupada's books? See? We read Srila Prabhupada's books and something happens. It makes real sense. Yes, this is what really matters. This is what I was looking for. And this is what I am completely prepared to commit myself to. So let's take full advantage of this book distribution marathon. Like, how many of you are going out distributing books? Not that many. Okay. So from tomorrow, I think the marathon is starting from Pita Jayanti. How many of you are going out to distribute books from tomorrow onwards? Still not that many. Okay, as I mentioned, there is an epidemic. Many, many people are dying. And you have the medicine. How many of you will go out and distribute that medicine to the people, those who are suffering from the disease? Right? So this is a better response. Right? Now, by accepting Krishna consciousness, did you benefit?
Yes.
How many of you benefited by accepting Krishna consciousness?
Yes.
Do you want others, those who are also suffering, to benefit from this?
Yes.
To distribute this and create the good fortune so that others also can benefit. So how many of you are going to go out distributing Srila Prabhupada's books? Please do that. Please do that. One of our God brothers, Vaisheshika Prabhu, is a very exemplary book distributor. He actually is inspiring everyone to read Srila Prabhupada's books. Actually, I know him for many, many years, At one time he was working outside, and during his lunch break, he used to go out every day, although he's working in an office. But every day he used to go out during the lunch break distributing Prabhupada's books. So committed he was to distribution of Prabhupada's books. And today he has completely surrendered himself. In the beginning he was actually a brahmachari, he was a big book distributor. Then he got married, then he had the responsibility to maintain his family. So he took up a job. For the time being, he was little distance from the mainstream of ISKCON. But now he has come back to the mainstream. And he goes out, you know, inspiring devotees to distribute books. And you know who is his main target to inspire in book distribution? Householders. Householders. And you know who is his best ideal models for book distributors, book distributions? The children. So, how many of you have children? Okay, how many of you are in the householder order? How many of you are householders? How many of you have children? So, can you go out to distribute books with your children? I tell you, it creates such a wonderful impression on the people. A little child goes, will you take a Bhagavad Gita, please? You know, in this book, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has given the absolute knowledge. Who can resist that preaching? Huh? Okay, I can see that there are very few householders. So, anyway, wherever you are, please make it a point to distribution of Prabhupada's books. And, you know, there is another very nice way of responding to this call for distribute books is that we put a balance.
Tula bar.
Tula bar. Yeah, downstairs. Okay, so we have it downstairs. Tula Bar Seva. You sit on one side and we will start putting Bhagavad Gita on the other side, and as the balance, it comes to a balance, that many Bhagavad Gita you distribute. How many of you are going to respond to this? Let's see, come on. It doesn't cost very much, actually. How was your weight? Accepting some, mostly 60 kilos, 70 kilos. There's only about 100 Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Have a diet so that your weight will increase. So, please take up this opportunity, yeah? Because Prabhupada will be pleased, Krishna will be pleased, and your life will become so full of joy. So thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. Namaste Sharashati Deve Gauravanta Chari Nirvishesha Shunravati Vashtatari Shriva Prabhupada.
I must say a few words. I'll say a few words. I had a long drive and a heavy program tomorrow. Anishori Prabhu, thank you very much for your transcendental diaries. Satsuru Maharaj's Srila Prabhupada is an overview of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, and Harishchandra Prabhu's transcendental is an underview. For you get right in the details of the day. It really helps us to know Srila Prabhupada at every moment. So, add to your reading list if it's not already on it, Times and Diary, and we look forward to seeing the final volume, plus one more.
No, three more.
Three more?
I have a diary that I kept from October 1977. When I grew up right back to Brindavan.
Yeah.
So I had a small diary that I kept during that period. And the other two volumes of Transcendental Diary, that will come when it comes.
I'm just listening to that, to the October 77, listening to the recordings now. It's really touching.
Yes.
Heartrending. Yes. Prabhupada is saying to his, he's calling all his godbrothers and asking for forgiveness and all his offenses. It's really hard. Of course, Prabhupada never made it. There's no question of offense in Srila Prabhupada. It's just heartbreaking how, for all his world preaching, is so incredible. But I said, Hare Krishna. If you might meet again, you'd like to even give a lecture, Jagannath Temple tomorrow morning and Monday morning.
Maybe I can just give a little introduction to you. They need to know. Hare Krishna, let me introduce His Grace Harishauri Prabhu. As it has been mentioned earlier, Harishauri Prabhu is from England. And he joined also at a very young age, like most of the devotees in our movement during those days. Which year did you join?
72.
Harishauri Prabhu joined ISKCON in 1972 in England. And
in Sydney.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, he joined in Australia, in Sydney. And Harishauri Prabhu used to be Srila Prabhupada's personal assistant, personal secretary. And he served Srila Prabhupada very intimately for many, many years. And then Harishauri Prabhu actually became the GBC of Australia. And he had, under his leadership, things have developed in Australia in a remarkable way. I have personally witnessed that, like how wonderfully Krishna consciousness movement developed under his leadership. And now Harishauri Prabhu spends most of his time in Mayapur, and he is writing his Transcendental Diary, which is describing his days with Srila Prabhupada and the way he recorded all those incidents and anecdotes. And they are presented in now 8 volumes?
Five so far.
Okay, five. Two more to come, and then you said 3 more. So total there will be 8. Yeah. So there will be 8 volumes of the Transcendental Diary. 5 has already come out. 2 are in the process of coming, and the 3rd also will come. So we are very fortunate to have His Grace Harishauri Prabhu in our midst. He's a very, very exalted devotee, very committed to Krishna consciousness movement, and a very loyal servant of Srila Prabhupada. His Grace Harishauri Prabhu ki
jai.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'm very pleased to come here. This is my first time. I only ever came to Bangalore one time before, about 6 or 8 years ago. But it's very nice to see all these temples developing. So many people have been blessed by personalities like Gajachara Maharaj, like Vikash Maharaj. We have a lot of work to do in spreading Krishna consciousness. This is only just the beginning. But I think that we'll see as time goes by, people will appreciate Prabhupada's books more and more. There's a story that I heard in America. I was living in Alachua for about 6 years, about 3 years. And
So some devotees have gone to this American Academy of Religions conference, which runs every year in America. And sometimes some of our devotees go to that conference. So one professor, non-devotee, he got up and he said, actually, he said, you Hare Krishna devotees, you don't appreciate what Prabhupada is doing. So some of the devotees were thinking, let's not appreciate, we're his disciples, how can we not appreciate? So the professor said, you won't appreciate what Prabhupada has done until you're 70 years old. Then you'll understand. So now how old are you, Maharaj?
75.
He's 75. Yes. And the youngster in comparison. I just turned 69. But the point is that what Prabhupada did is unprecedented. There's not been anybody in the spiritual life and the material life that has achieved what Prabhupada has achieved. It's remarkable that in 11 years he could set up the framework for millions of people to be engaged in Krishna's service, to understand who is God actually, and give people the chance that human form is meant for, to get out of this material world and go back on back to Godhead. So the main service that Prabhupada did in that connection was translation and then printing. That was something Prabhupada always regarded as his own personal service. Yeah, many of us know we have particular services that we do.
Okay.
We're happy to engage with Srila Prabhupada. He had to not just chant and study and write the purports to his transcendental Bhagavatam house, but he had to go out and tour the world every week, some new place we went to gradually. And he had thousands of disciples. Altogether, I think the count was about 4,800. Prabhupada had to somehow or another organize the temples, organize the new devotees, the deity worship, which is the best that you'll find in any temple in the world, the standard that Prabhupada gave us in this, you know. So there's a lot of things that Prabhupada was doing all. There was one lady professor that came to see Prabhupada in Toronto in 1976 in June. And she was a professor actually from India. She asked Prabhupada, how is it all these Bhagavatams and Chaitanya Charitamrita? Chaitanya Charitamrita had 17 volumes in 2 months. There's a little story behind that, because Rameshwara Prabhu now, he was in charge of the BBT in Los Angeles, and they were doing amazing things already. But when Prabhupada went there, I think in 1975, then he had just moved the BBT from New York to Los Angeles. So when he came to Los Angeles, he had an inspection of the book warehouse. He got printed lists of what's there, and he saw that 17 volumes of books that he'd already translated still were not published. And there's a lot of work involved in publishing a book, just, you know, right from choosing the fonts, four color or two color, so many different things, aspects to book distribution. So Prabhupada was quite disturbed that he had been working very hard to write his books, and we were not distributing them. We hadn't even got them in print. So he told them, he said, now I'll be coming
the next 2 months. So I want all 17 books published within the next 2 months. So Rameshwar reacted the same way everybody else did. He said, but that's impossible, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada stopped. He said, nothing is impossible in a... Sorry. Impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. Yes, impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. So, to their credit, they were on the morning walk. They could have completed that with Prabhupada and then come back. But they immediately left the walk. They drove back to the temple. They called all the devotees that were involved in any aspect of BBT work. And they told them, now we've got 2 months to get all of these into print. So they set like a shift system up, that one group of devotees come on, they do their work. Then after they've finished, another group comes on, and then a third group. So in that way, the production of the Chaitanya Charitamrita especially was done in remarkably fast standard. And at the same time, it was something that in ordinary book production circles, nobody does anything like that. So our devotees set to, in 2 months' time, they were pleased to see Srila Prabhupada again, and they handed in the last of the volumes that were missing. So 17 books on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then the next thing was that now we have the books, we have to distribute them. So the Christmas marathon, as they call it in the West, Christmas time was recognized as a good time for selling more books. People are, spending lots of money and getting gifts for their friends. So that was the birth of the Sankirtan Christmas Marathon. And they were doing remarkable things. Tens of thousands of books were going out. They were going to the airports, the car parks, anywhere where anybody was, and selling them the Bhagavatam and other books of Srila Prabhupada. And he was very, very pleased with that. So that tradition is held. Where we are again, another Christmas coming up. Not that Christmas means anything in India anyway, but this is a period when all the devotees get geared up to go out and double or triple or quadruple or even more the numbers of books that they're selling. And Prabhupada was very, very happy with that. Radha Balaba, at that time, he was the manager of the BBT in Los Angeles. So he was overseeing the production of all these books. And they had been printing with a company in New York. And that company was instructed that as soon as a new book is completed, you have to send some samples to Los Angeles, spread the message. So they were working very hard, and Radha Balaba, he also was working very hard. And one evening he got two new books by courier. They were being printed in New York and then brought down to Los Angeles. So he was thinking, I'll go and I'll give these books to Srila Prabhupada immediately. He'll be very pleased and enthused to see his books are actually coming out. So they went up to Prabhupada's room in Los Angeles. Prabhupada was working on his next books. Prabhupada's schedule was unrepeatable. He would work about 4 hours in the night time when everybody else was asleep. So Radha Balaba knew that Prabhupada was still up, even though it was 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So he took two samples of this particular book and he showed it to Srila Prabhupada, and he was expecting or hoping that Prabhupada would chit-chat with him for a while and, you know, give him some enthusiasm. So Prabhupada looked at the books, and then he looked at Radhabalava, and then he said, "So where are the rest?" He said, "Go and work." So that was at 2 o'clock in the morning. So a lot of little pastimes that we had in traveling around. There was nothing that made Prabhupada more happy than seeing his books come out. And in the first canto, which Prabhupada did in India, the second volume, it had just come out, and one of Prabhupada's friends had seen it in translating the, you know, the Bhagavatam, and he was surprised. Prabhupada was 64 years old by that time, and this man couldn't understand why at that age Srila Prabhupada was, you know, starting up this big production of books, etc. And a couple of professors, they came to see him in Toronto, and the library party, which was about six devotees, they'd been touring all over the country, persuading professors, libraries, universities to buy Prabhupada's books on a standing order. So Prabhupada was pushing that, driving that as much as he could. And let's see what happened. So this Professor O'Connell, he's dead now. He died a couple of years ago. But he was very favorable to Srila Prabhupada. He was one of the main academics in the Toronto University. So he came with two or three friends, professor friends, to see Srila Prabhupada in Toronto in 1976. So in the course of the discussion, one lady, professor, she asked Srila Prabhupada that how is it that you can do so much work like this? You know, just even setting up one center and running it is a big enough headache. You've got over 100. You're touring all over, and you're also printing so many amazing books. So they were shocked actually to see, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita out in 17 volumes with, you know, the Bengali, the transcription, the translation, and the purports. They'd never seen anything like it. And so Prabhupada explained, he said, just like little drops of water fall on a stone and gradually makes a hole in it. So in the same way, he said, I am doing. I get up at 11:30, I chant my rounds, if there's any balance, and then I do my work. And that usually would stop around Mangalarati time. So you get at least 3 or 4 hours just doing Prabhupada's, just doing his translation work and commentary. So they were all amazed how anybody could do such a thing. There was another fellow, I'll use his name because he's dead now, so he won't get angry with me. But there was one fellow in Chicago University, I think he was. His name was Professor Dimmock. If any of you have seen the early version of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita when it first came out, I think Penguin publishes, so those so this Professor Dimmock, he was approached by the devotees, by the library party, to put in a requisition notice so that the library would order Prabhupada's books. So the thing about him was that he had been working for many years, I mean literally many years, to make the first English translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita. That was going to be his magnus opus, the work of a lifetime. He was one of the most highly respected academics in America. He specialized and Goswami literature. Little by little he was publishing, well, not so much publishing, but anyway, this Professor Dimmock, he was approached by our devotees that were on the library party, and they had a system that they would go directly to the librarian and find out if there were any books in the library. If there wasn't, then he would get what was called a requisition slip. So any professor that wanted a book, they could fill out a requisition form, and then they give that into the library. They would order the books, and then the professor could use them in the university. So that Dr. Dimmock, he was working on his version. And he wasn't particularly impressed, actually, to be frank. He didn't really, wasn't that attracted to Srila Prabhupada and his works. But he wrote a foreword for Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. I think the first time the devotees approached him, he didn't want to do it. So they found out that this man is actually a drunkard. Yeah, he's a big professor, but he drinks a lot. So they waited until he was a bit drunk. And they had written out, you know, the review. And they gave it to him, and he signed it without really reading it. So they got his, you know, they got his endorsement for Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. When he found out, when he finally sobered up and saw the book that he'd signed up for, he was shocked. This is Bhaktivedanta Swami's works, and I've just recommended it. So it was an interesting exchange. Sasrupa Maharaj said that when they showed the actual finished volumes, they showed a picture and one sample. When Professor Dimmock saw it, they said that he practically had a heart attack because he'd been working for so many years to put the book, you know, this one book out, and couldn't do it. Prabhupada comes to America in 18 months. He's done the whole lot. Plus, he's still doing the Bhagavatam. And he's doing, you know, the summary study of Krishna. He's doing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He's doing the Ishapanishad. I mean, literally scores of books were coming out, different books. And this man was shocked. You know, he thought that he was going to hit the peak when he produced his own Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when he saw Prabhupada's and so nicely produced, he almost had a heart attack. So anyway, Prabhupada astonished the academic community by this book production, there was no magic or something attached to that. It was just plain hard work. Prabhupada was from 12 o'clock up until about Mangal Arati. That's what he was doing every single night. And I saw when we were in Hawaii in 1976, Prabhupada spent the whole of the month of May working on his books. And whereas normally on his dictaphone, there's like a little counter, you know, which tells you how far you're into the particular translation of the tape. So normally Prabhupada would do anywhere from like 50 digits on the microphone up to maybe 100. But in that particular May marathon, Prabhupada was doing 6 or 7 times the amount that he would normally do. Several times Prabhupada had sent for me to come into his room. And he told me, he said, I'm not going to go on the morning walk tomorrow morning. I'm going to finish this book. So he hadn't taken any rest whatsoever, not even a wink. He worked all through the night, and he completed, I think it was the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. And if you look in that book, the very last note or addition to the purports was that Prabhupada saying that I'm now in New Navadweep in Hawaii. We've this book by the mercy of Lord Krishna and the Panchatattva, because the Hawaii temple, they have Panchatattva deities. He said, with the help of my disciples and followers, they're being appreciated and distributed all over the world. So Prabhupada marked that. So he was very, very happy about the book production. He did something unprecedented. So I'm not going to go on for very long. I've got the hook. You know what the hook is. Does anybody know what the hook is in dramas and performances? In the old days, in the theatres, they would have in the intermission of the film, then they would have some entertainer that would come on the stage, and everybody got a 10-minute break, then they went back to seeing the film again. So the guy that was the entertainer, when he'd run out of time, they had a long pole with a hook around it, and they'd slip it around his neck and pull him off. So we've got the hook here, unfortunately. We'll be coming back tomorrow. But anyway, the most important thing that we can do is to spread Prabhupada's teachings all around the world. He did something which is unprecedented in book production, in prasadam distribution, deity worship, everything you can imagine. Prabhupada was the person it started from. These professors, they were just astounded. They'd never seen anything like it. You know, they know what writing's all about, but to do what Prabhupada was doing, there's nobody on the planet could do that. So we have a privilege to take up Prabhupada's book distribution. And, you know, things happen. I had an experience. It was just a small thing, but we'd been to Adelaide, and we'd been distributing books there. There's about four or five of us. One of the devotees, the head of the book party, his name was Buddy Manta. So Buddy Manta actually got credit for being the first ISKCON devotee to sell hardbound books right there on the street. Yeah, the books were starting to come out in the early 70s, but they couldn't figure out how to sell them. Then Buddy Manta came along, and he adopted all kinds of unusual methodology for selling the books, and he actually convinced the devotees, you can sell these books on the street. We were thinking they'd have to be sold in a bookstore, but he went out and he used to distribute 50, 70, 100 books a day right there on the street. So Buddy Manta was a special kind of character, and what was he going to say? He came in February of 1973 to Australia, and you know, he used to travel around the whole country and train the devotees up in book production and distribution. So Prabhupada took advantage of his disciples' youth and energy. Yeah, it's a bit like Maharaj Yayati, you've seen in the Bhagavatam. He was given a benediction that if somebody would agree, he could get their youth and they would become an old man. So he had four or five sons. Each one that was asked, my dear son, will you give me your youth and you take my old age so that I can have a good time with my new wife? And each son said, no, sorry, I can't do that. I've got other things to do. So nobody would do it until Prithu was the youngest. And he was asked by his father, will you take my old age and give me your youth? So he was a very obedient servant and son of his father. So he, without hesitation, he said, yes, this is very good. It'll please my father. So he went off and he traveled for, what was it, about 1,000 years. And then finally he had a realization that you know, this is not good. I've taken my father's youth just to enjoy and I've left him in a decrepit condition. So he went back to his father and then he told him, now, my dear father, I've done what I wanted to do. Now you please take back your youth. I'll become old. So that way they shared the youth and old age between them. Anyway, so the point is that Srila Prabhupada, he was already an old man when he came to America. So how was he going to do his book production? In Vrindavan, he had been doing everything on a manual typewriter. And one of his friends couldn't understand why he was writing, you know, with so much labor when he was already 64 years old. By 1965, when Prabhupada was ready to come to the West, then this friend of his asked him, why are you bothering like this? You're in Vrindavan, you should retire. You're so old, you won't be able to go out and sell them. What's the point of, you know, doing an English translation and commentary on the Bhagavatam? It's taken 4 years to do the first volume, the first canto. So if you, you know, calculate that out, he was 64, no, he was 69 by that time, and he was preparing to go to the West. This friend of his asked him, why are you bothering like this? You know, this is a book nobody's heard of. It's taken so many years of labor. You should just retire now, because the Bhagavatam is 12 cantos, and you're already 64. So how are you going to complete it? It seemed to his friend that it was an impossible task, and it would just never happen. So he got his first three volumes out, and in this conversation that he had with this man, the man sent him a letter, which Prabhupada reproduced in the second volume of the first canto. And Prabhupada's reply was there. And Prabhupada's reply was, what's the problem? He said, in the heavenly planets, they also have the Bhagavatam. But in the heavenly planets, there are millions and millions of volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have a short version. But in the higher planets, they have millions of narrations of Krishna and the devotees. So he said, if they can do it, then why should I not? So he kept on going with his books. Finally, he got to America, and after getting set up there, then Krishna provided him with a solution to this, you know, massive work of translation. How would it be completed? How would it be sold? You know, Prabhupada had taken the first canto with him to America, and he was going from shop to shop and library to library trying to sell one or two volumes. So he was not daunted whatsoever by the task in front of him. And as soon as he started going out, then he started attracting some young men to his temple in 26 Second Avenue. And the first thing that he did was engage them in producing his Back to Godhead magazine, which had been coming out since 1944, but very sporadically. So now he was in America. He wanted to revive the Back to Godhead. He engaged these young men to come and, you know, do that labor of printing them out and distributing them. And Prabhupada was very happy. Then Gargamuni came one time, and he had a machine with him. and it was what was called a dictaphone. So the controls were, you know, on one side in one hand, and then you speak into the microphone. So Prabhupada began translating his books using the dictaphone. So that immediately increased the amount of work that was being done by the BBT, because Prabhupada now had found a way to speed up the production and sales, and he had a good chance of finishing the Bhagavatam. So he remained very optimistic, even though it was a seemingly impossible task. If you calculate that from 1965, when Prabhupada had completed the first canto, so there were three volumes, it took him 4 years. So if you calculate, there's another 11 cantos that he still had to do. If they took the average time of this 11 cantos to produce that, then at that rate that he was going with his typewriter, he would be about 114 years old. Yeah. So who, you know, with that prospect, who would sit down and start writing and translating when they know that they can't complete it for 14 years or till he's 114? But he did. He just had the determination to do it. So Krishna gave him the means. They discovered this dictaphone, and by just speaking into the dictaphone, his development of his book distribution and processing was done very, very quickly. So within a couple of years, he had a full group of devotees, some of them like Hayagriva. He was an English professor. He had them all out selling his books. And he said many times that that was his goal, that these books will act even if the person doesn't read them. If you have them in your house, they make everything auspicious, and eventually everybody will read them. And we met one fellow in Melbourne and got talking to him, and he was interested in the books, and he told the book distributor that he was a dustbin man. In the West, they have these fancy machines for collecting garbage. So this man was a garbage man. And they throw all the garbage in the back of the truck and they move on. So this fellow, he saw in the garbage a book. So he took the book out. It was one of Prabhupada's books. So somebody had gotten it and then thrown it away and gone in the garbage. So this garbage man, he got the book and he thought, well, this looks interesting. So he started reading the book that he found in his garbage van. And about 8 years later, he joined the temple. So, you know, if even the garbage man can do it, then certainly we can. Anyway, there's lots of stories we can tell. I think I'm speaking here tomorrow morning. I just wanted to add to the stress that you all have in, you've got to go to your jobs, you've got to do your work. But Prabhupada said there's no limit to what you can do. Yeah, somehow or another, sleep less if you have to. Said like me, I had an impossible task. But by cutting down my sleeping, now I'm able to do more. So we have to have that kind of mood. If you want to, you know, do well in the marathon for Prabhupada's pleasure, then if you have not much time, do a half hour, do 1 hour, do 2 hours, whatever you can, sell some of Prabhupada's books. And that will, you know, cause Krishna consciousness to spread all over the planet. So we're still at the beginning. There's more and more books are coming out in different languages. There's more and more devotees joining in our ISKCON temples. I think eventually Prabhupada's wish will be fulfilled. So that, you know, we've done our little bit. Not that we're not going to do any more, Prabhupada's disciples. but now there's, you know, such an expansion of ISKCON all around the world, so many people coming now to join in the Sankirtan movement. So if you can get them to get one book or two books, that's success, and you can continue doing that. Why just, you know, for the Christmas marathon, you can have a marathon every day. So that's our humble request. You try and do the best that you can, and amazing things will happen. One last little anecdote. I've been to Adelaide with three or four other devotees. We had distributed a fair amount of books. We had we went there with a van load and came back with practically nothing. We'd sold them all. So halfway back to Melbourne, we stopped at a petrol station. So the party leader, Buddy Manta, I was asleep in the back of the van, and Buddy Manta shook me on the shoulder quite vigorously. He said, "You're not here to sleep. There's a guy in the petrol station working there. Go and sell him a bag of a Gita." So I was really in the modes of material nature, ignorance and passion. I really didn't want to do it, but because I'd been ordered, I had to try. So I staggered out of the van. I was still half asleep, and I went into the petrol station kiosk area, and I saw there was one guy there, but whoever was running the pumps, the owner or whatever, he had gone somewhere. So I saw this man, he had just pulled up to get some petrol. And then after that, he was browsing through some of the goods that they had in the store. So I saw the owner is not there. Let me try this customer of his. So I went up to him and I just started chatting to him. Who are you? Where are you from? He told me, he said, "Well, actually, I live up in the Adelaide Hills, I'm a horticulturalist. I grow vegetables, that's for a living, and I take them down to the market once a week." So I said, "You know, perhaps you'd like to see this book. I was going to give it to the guy that owns the place, but you're here and he's not. So let me show you the book." So he was a friendly guy. He said, "All right, let me see it." So I opened the Gita, and it came out of the verse where Krishna says that I am the light of the sun and the moon, and I make the vegetables grow. I had, up to that point, I had never seen that verse before. When I opened it up to sell to this guy, that was the one verse. You know, he was a gardener. He liked selling vegetables. So Krishna got him. So, you know, there's some nice stories. You have a lot of fun. Sometimes it's hard work. Sometimes things happen very quickly. But if you want to please Prabhupada, sell his books. That's the best way to do it. He said that time and again. All right, so our 2 minutes have gone. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you for inviting me to come. I didn't know that this was going to be the beginning of the book distribution marathon. So I think all the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, what's the name of the deity?
Gandhava
Giridhari.
Sriman Mahaprabhu.
All right. Gandhava Giridhari, Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, they're all watching to see what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks. So apply yourselves as best you can. As Prabhu was saying before, even if you can only sell one book a day, it all counts. Yeah. So thank you all very much, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah.